Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a podcast from the Smart Material Collective, made by nerds, funded by the listeners.
Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? I'm your host, Oz Ismail. And today I'm your host and not Alex, because we have this new refined music. And with refined music comes refined hosting.
And advertising.
And you just ruined my whole refined thing that I was going for by mentioning the adverts. Damn it, now we're back to where we were before.
Yeah,
anyway.
We're only refined for money. I wonder very, who very made small this, amounts of money.
I wonder who made this refined music.
Oh, what creative, should we talk about the fringe artist who...
The creative genius.
The creative genius.
Who could that possibly be?
My God.
Can we talk about this artiste?
I think we're not allowed because...
Is there an embargo? Is there some kind of secrecy that we've signed?
They're afraid of the public adoration that might follow. The groupies and that.
Suhail made the music. Yeah, I mean, Suhail made the music.
It wasn't clear.
You'll see his Insta stories at 3 a.m. where he's making beats on FL Studio.
That's the
man
life
of
I
many
lead.
Talents.
This life I lead. Then I'm late for work.
But as you've heard today, I'm joined by a full house. Today we have Hannah Ayoub.
Hello.
What have you been up to, Hannah?
So I got back from Singapore about a week ago.
Are you ever in the UK anymore?
I've got to be here for 3 months now before I can go back again. And like enjoy some tropical weather and like, you know, being near the people I love.
So basically what we're hearing is Hannah has gone international and you better get your appointments in quick because it's very hard to get hold of Hannah these days. I'm also joined by Alex Lathbridge. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Oz.
How are you feeling today? Feeling refined?
No, I feel really good and not at all stupid that I forgot two of the microphones and therefore had to go into the stupid corner and give up my hosting rights to you.
Also, because we were going for the refineness. Yeah. Don't forget to tell people that.
We're more refined. Hashtag refined. Hashtag blessed.
We're actually using two cups and strings now for me and Alex. Yeah, going straight to the mixer.
One of my favorite childhood toys, by the way. And I'm also joined by... Why does that sound weird?
Oh my God.
I'm also joined by Suhail Patel.
That's me. Hola, amigos.
How you doing? What have you been up to?
I've been eating this cold katsu curry.
Yeah, it's gross, by the way.
It really stinks.
It's just the fact that he's eating cold
katsu. You say curry stinks, racist.
But I've never... how does cold curry smell worse
than a Boris Johnson debate?
Because if we're on politics compared to the last episode... So, you know, when the last episode went out, within 24 hours, I've been blocked by Dominic Raab.
That is quite the accomplishment. Dominic Raab is an evil genius from the future, time traveling to destroy human civilization.
That's a pretty good summary.
That's actually a really good summary of.
But you think with Dominic Raab, he's like holding back bare anger. Like every time I see him in an interview, I feel like he's just going to start slitting throats and shit. Come on, this is satire. We're allowed to say that. Go get Preet Patel to block you.
So
is that the new goal?
That's the goal. Okay, so when Suhail, Oz and I went out, right, after we both finished our PhDs and stuff, me and Oz, and got quite drunk. I remember being in an ice cream shop at like...
Oh my God, yes, about, I remember this story.
About 1 a.m. And we were like, you know, what would it be like? Like, who would play us in a film? What would that like if we made a film about the rise of the podcast and
that's how big our egos are. You know,
and Oz, what was yours?
Dev Patel.
Yours was Dev Patel.
And Dev Patel and a magic spell.
Who are you?
Wait, I'm going to find who I said you'd be.
I'd be James Franco with no, five extra stones on him.
Gus Kahn, yes.
I'd be Gus Kahn, my main nun.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to be Michael B. Jordan. I was Michael B. Jordan. And who did you say Hannah should be?
Not me. This is what I mean about confusing me and Sahel, by the way, Alex.
Sahel, who do you say?
Pretty Patel because you're beautiful, just like her.
Hannah's face right now very different. Is just...
A, she's not an actress. B, she's not beautiful. And C, she's Pretty Patel.
I meant it in an ironic way because you're the complete opposite.
Okay, can someone explain who Pretty Patel is for...
No. If you don't know who Pretty Patel is, stop listening.
we have a quite a big international audience who might not be keeping up with UK politics. So can someone explain who Pretty Patel is quite quickly?
She is a politician, conservative politician, who is... How do I say this in a nice way?
She's of Indian origin, parents from Uganda who came here, and now she wants to support all the immigrants. So that's really fun.
I know. I think there's a whole thing about kicking the ladder underneath you, from beneath you. And speaking of Question Time, the guy who said he didn't, he wasn't in the top 5%. Did you hear about this? Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was the other Question Time.
There's the one before.
Didn't he say he wasn't in the top 50%?
He's in the top 50%. Yo. Bruv, how are you earning 80k? Say, man don't know maths. Quick maths, you get me?
So apart from politics and all of that in the last couple of weeks, one really weird thing that the internet has brought up is, do you remember T.I.? Rapper T.I.?
Yeah.
Artist T.I.?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I've only just found out who he is.
Need that. Money talk, power.
Oh shit, I'm bleeding.
Oz is bleeding. When we talk about T.I., Oz is bleeding, which is going to be very relevant in a little bit because on the podcast Ladies Like Us, the rapper and actor T.I. mentioned that, so he has yearly trips with his daughter to the gynecologist where to check her hymen, and he goes with her.
Now, I saw this news article and I genuinely thought it was one of those jokes, one of those like fake news articles.
Mm.
And then it just exploded and turned out to be true.
Mm. So you saw it before it became a thing. You were like, you were on the cusp of that way where it became...
I'm always on the cusp.
You always on the cusp of cutting edge.
Yeah, I was on the cusp and 100% believed it.
Wow.
Yeah. Someone should check his head if he's got any brain cells in there. What do you think?
Yeah. But that's wild, right?
Like, it is wild. It's fucked.
Every year going with his daughter to check. Like, who would do that? Why would you do that?
A very insecure man, clearly.
There's just... there were so many bullshit takes on this. Like, even... Like, I know Sahel's joking about the brain cell thing. But the idea that it's just people that are stupid that believe this stuff is actually, like, makes me more uncomfortable. Makes it really easy to dismiss, like... absolute bullshit that is really harmful behavior rather than sort of examining where it comes from.
Because people have been talking about it on Twitter a lot. Like I see like a lot of discourse, and it's mostly by white women.
White feminism is all over this shit.
Because of course you can't quite see Hannah's face is, I mean, Oz, how would you describe it?
Like I've never seen before. So many emotions waiting to come out.
I texted Alex before this episode saying that I was getting increasingly frustrated reading about hymens and virginity, and he just replied saying, let the hate flow through you.
So can we go through this whole story? So the story is that this rapper, he takes...
Sorry, put some respect on T.I.'s name. I know he's...
No. He gets no respect on this episode.
T.I. superfan, Alex.
No. I didn't say...
distancing myself rapidly from the music of T.I.
He who shall not be named.
I'm not going to Prince Andrew this. Like, fuck this guy. All right. So last time you with Akon, you were like, oh, Acorn. All right. This is what we're doing. we're going through our favorites.
So basically,
Thai curry.
He takes his daughter. How old is his daughter?
She's just turned 18, I think. So he takes her to the gynecologist after every birthday.
Fuck.
So this is now, basically this has become like some kind of family routine.
Yeah. Like apparently he sticks a post-it note up saying gyno, like
this is so gross. Time.
Yeah. Mm. It gets grosser as well because like she has to sign a consent form to say that he can have access to that data.
Wow.
And according to him, she signs that like with him in the room, which is
so there's a lot of sounds, BS. So it's, but kind of sounds like she's being intimidated into
signing. She's being coerced, 100%. Yeah, yeah. There's no way you can't, you would do that.
And I mean,
willingly.
Like, so the World Health Organization is fundamentally like against virginity tests. They've, you know, declared that they don't do anything. It's impossible to actually tell from an examination whether a woman has had sex or not. And also they're traumatic. They generally happen when a woman has been coerced or a girl has been coerced. So the hymen is a collection of cells that partially block the vaginal opening. It's contrary to lots of beliefs, like it's not an actual sort of closed membrane. It can also be very, very flexible. So this sort of collection of cells, it's rigid at birth and it stays as quite like a rigid covering of the vagina for the first 3 years. The whole point is to keep urine and feces out of the infant vagina because for those 3 years, generally babies and toddlers like have no control of their poop or their pee. And also because of the lack of estrogen at that point, one of the hormones, the vagina can be extra sensitive to irritants and to infections. So around the time that children start to be continent, so able to control their pee and poop, the hymen starts to change shape and it starts to become a lot more flexible. So it's almost like this weird sort of evolutionary hang up. It serves a purpose for those 3 years. And yet, like collectively at society, as a society, it seems to be one of the body parts that we are like the most obsessed with. I think the myth that the hymen is this, you know, membrane that stays intact until someone has sex, it also has other consequences. So I have, you know, I've personally heard that thing of like, you know, you shouldn't wear tampons whilst you're a virgin because they could disrupt the hymen, when for, you know, plenty of people, tampons are more comfortable than other options. You know, there's even the fear of people going for smear tests, you know, to detect cervical cancer, because there's a potential that you could lose your virginity, you know, through that test. And, you know, sort of, this is quite a personal thing. My hymen probably did break when I had a smear test. And I'm very lucky to live in a family, in a culture where, you know, it was more about the pain and suffering rather than about the fact that, oh dear God, my future husband's going to think that, you know, I'm not pure. And I mean, that is a potentially life-saving test. And so I think that it's sort of, these things go beyond just sex control, and just the layers of harm are just, you know, there's just so many layers of it, from avoiding cancer detection to being more unnecessarily uncomfortable during your period.
So can I ask, how did this idea, when did the hymen become associated with virginity? How did that come about?
I mean, my gut instinct is it's actually like much more to do with virginity as a concept being attached to the hymen. This idea that women are property, that, you know, having sex fundamentally changes a woman. And I'm guessing part of that is probably to do with paternity. So, you know, virginity is important because you want a virgin wife who is going to produce children that you know are yours. And I guess like the hymen being a thing that apparently like, you know, covers the vagina has probably become part of this myth. We talked a bit on the inferior episode about how this, the focus on paternity probably actually kicked in when humans started to accumulate property. So it only became really important for a man to know who his children were when he had property to pass down.
Ooh, that's interesting.
And chances are before that point, it really didn't matter, as long as a village or a community as a whole, so it wasn't village because, you know, people hadn't settled down, but like, you know, that amongst more sort of hunter gatherer nomadic societies, the village would collectively raise children. Didn't really matter whose kids they were. You know, everyone was passing on their genes. And I think a slightly more worrying thing that probably links to why there's this focus on the hymen is this focus on bleeding during the first time a woman has sex. So people think that's when the hymen breaks.
Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, that's the thing that, I don't know, we were always taught at school. Not taught, I think you taught it at school, but it was sort of like indirectly, it was like the hymen breaks, the hymen, there will be blood after the first time you have sex.
There will be blood.
And the hymen...
Is that movie, isn't it?
Oh, what? I didn't even know how to call this shit out.
It's a movie, isn't it?
It's that blood. Movie's not about hymen breaking or sex.
It's true. It's a good movie, though.
So the hymen itself doesn't have enough of a blood supply to bleed that much. So generally, like, around 2/3 of women experience no bleeding the first time they have sex. Those who do, it's usually sort of, you know, spotting. That very traditional view, especially within certain cultures, that there should be, you know, stained sheets or sheets that, like, in, there's some awful, like, you know, societal practices where people, like, are expected to hang out the bloodstained sheets the next morning. That's a sign of trauma. Like, if a woman is bleeding that much, then, you know, she has been physically hurt during sex.
Sorry, what do you mean hang out the sheets?
Over the balcony or outside the house.
So, like, put it out on display to...
To prove that the bride was a virgin.
Wow, that's crazy. I've never heard of that. For real?
No, I've heard of this for sure. Like, I've heard they put down a white sheet on their the night after the wedding.
Yeah.
And then it's, like, proof that the bride was a virgin and that they've had sex for the first time.
Wow.
It's like so insane.
That is crazy shit, man.
Fuck.
We're just all speechless about that. I had no idea people did that. That's intense.
Even already establishing that, so the hymen itself doesn't bleed when it breaks, or if it does, it's only some spotting. The hymen is just not an indicator in any way, shape or form of virginity. Some people are born without one. In lots of, you know, people, it breaks when, you know, I mean, the sort of tropes are sort of riding a horse or riding a bike, but it can be all sorts of things. And also 50% of sexually active teens have an intact hymen. So a hymen that isn't, like, disrupted at all, because it's a really flexible membrane.
Okay, so if we know all these sort of properties of the hymen, how come he can still take his daughter to a practicing qualified gynecologist who's doing this test on?
That's a very good point.
So this has been something that's been, like, discussed a lot online. Like, how is this allowed under medical ethics? There've been some people who've been sort of, like, blaming the US as sort of private system,
right?
But ultimately, no one really knows, because no one knows who this gynecologist is. There's a lot of people who are sort of posturing that, you know, there's sort of almost two options here. You've either got, you know, quite a sort of unethical medical professional who is doing this for money and sort of almost in cahoots with him, like, you know, or there is actually the other side that, you know, I don't know, I've got a lot of faith in humanity, so I sort of lean that way, which is, they're just saying what he wants to hear.
Yeah.
And if they don't say that, either someone else is going to, possibly someone who, you know, may say something that is going to put his daughter at risk, potentially. Or, you know, that if all medical professionals refuse, you know, there's even, like, and let's say we're talking more generally now to, like, you know, avoid accusing anyone, that it's something that could happen at home. You know, there are communities all over the world where a virginity test by a family member before marriage is a thing.
Wow.
So it's called, like, the two finger test.
Mm, mm-hmm. I'm meaning about
literally
this.
That,
yeah, literally that.
Yeah.
And, wow. You know, like, so I don't know, like, yeah, there's part of me that really hates the fact that a medical professional has done this, but equally, at least it's in the hands of a medical professional.
Yeah, yeah. I can just imagine some creepy uncle being like, I gotta test your virginity. Like, and like, what the fuck? Like, that's not cool, man.
Wait. A two finger test. That's, yeah. Okay. So everyone in the room, apart from Hannah, all three of us just went, like, just face blanching.
I think what's really interesting.
Like, okay, blanching as much as we can.
Yeah, there's a lot of melanin in this room.
Which is sort of like just a really old chocolate.
I think what's really fascinating about the facial expressions in this room as we're recording is that, as much as I'm sort of horrified, like, none of this stuff really shocks me anymore. Whereas I can see that you all are really shocked.
I mean, yeah, like, you know, when we're talking about like virginity tests and stuff and saying that you said 50% of sexually active teens in the US still have the hymen intact.
I'm going to guess that data's from the US.
Okay,
but
50% of sexually active teens. Mm. Okay, let's say a large proportion of sexually active teens still have the hymen intact. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of sex you can do that isn't vaginal.
So I think this was specifically like looking at vaginal, because otherwise that data is just like screwed.
I mean, the whole TI thing actually brings out that point. Like, people were saying, a lot of people were saying, like, you know, you're not going to tear your hymen going down on someone. You know, you're not going to tear your hymen giving someone a hand job or fingering someone or, you know, someone else, or, you know, going down on someone else. Like, there are there are so many things you can do. So why is TI...
Someone should check TI's anal virginity. Do you think?
I mean, like, the whole idea that we don't talk about male virginity. Like, so,
okay.
Listen, I'm happy to do it. But I use three fingers.
Oh, God.
Moving swiftly on.
Like, no, we're actually going to discuss with Oz the veracity.
He's a prick, bro. What is he doing?
We're going to discuss the veracity of anal virginity, Oz.
But I think part of that, it is about that fertility pregnancy thing. I think a part of why people are less bothered by other forms of sexual activity, or at least can pretend they're not bothered or whatever, is because it's about pregnancy. It's about being pure in order for like your future husband's seed to be planted. Like, you know, it is just really quite archaic when you strip it right back to what it's about. Sorry, Oz, you're about to say something.
You're right. It's just about men who are like stuck in this kind of warped patriarchal view of the world, and it's also, I feel, appeals to their insecurity in a way, because they're like so insecure, like they have to have control of the women in their lives or people in their lives like that, and it actually leads to, that's what I feel it's about. It's about having control of your children. A lot of people do that in different ways, but this is an extreme version of that, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like they've taken that reasoning and then applied it to this physical membrane that physiologically exists to be like, this is how we're going to justify our control and kind of prove it almost.
Yeah.
It's so insane.
But I think like the interesting thing as well is even if, right, like the hymen was an accurate representation of whether a woman's had sex before, like the chances of getting pregnant from, you know, that first sort of time that you have sex is something between like 2-5%. And then like, you know, the chances of that pregnancy succeeding, like the actual percentages are so low that it just doesn't actually make sense. Like, that knowing whether a woman is a virgin or not is not going to, when you get married, is not going to equate to whether you are the father of her first child.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those percentages are so low that like evolution is not going to invest in that, you know, even if there was some sort of evolutionary pressure.
How do you mean? Sorry.
So say like the chances of someone getting successfully pregnant from the first time that they have sex,
right,
is so low that it's very unlikely there's enough evolutionary pressure to somehow drive...
I get it.
Drive humans to evolve away for men to be able to test paternity.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So in the elephant, the hymen breaks when they give birth. That would be a slightly better way of like testing it.
Oh, really? Wow. Wow.
And there is some evidence that like some women, like their hymen breaks during birth.
Again, it goes back to this issue of control, isn't it? Like, you know, it's controlling women. Mm. You know, I say to Ty,
Wow, you're really putting slander on Ti's name.
Ti,
it's Ty.
Green Ty Curry. I say to him, yo, all right, if you're so concerned about your child's modesty, let's look for your phone and see what you're doing. Let me see your bank account, you're paying your taxes. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's a hypocrisy at the end of the day, because this guy is not some fucking vassal and prestige of like morality as he sees it. So what gives him some moral right to go around and say, oh, I'm going to check your virgin? I don't care if she's your child. You know what I mean? It's like the reality is that is an unethical thing and wrong thing for him to do.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We know that culturally, like, feeling controlled by families or parents doesn't end when you gain legal adulthood. You know, like, yes, apparently, like, she's having to sign something at the doctor's to say that she's happy for her father to know that information because she is an adult. But maybe it's just making life easier to do that. But I mean, I think the other thing is there's been a lot of focus on this individual case, and I think it has brought a lot of these issues to light, and people are talking about it. But more, you know, widely across society, across the world, like, virginity tests are used really widely, and they are, you know, potentially traumatic. They, you know, can bring up like previous sexual trauma. Like, you know, young girls and women can be, you know, can be having to relive like sexual assault because they're doubly worried of something being discovered because they've been, you know, intimidated into keeping things secret. There's all sort of confounding issues. So people who are intersex being doubly worried that it's going to throw up something else that their family is going to discover. You know, there's some idea, you know, that you know, that lesbians are worried they're going to be discovered in certain societies. It's just, it is such a pile of, I don't even know what the word is to use. Like,
yeah, this is what I'm thinking about. Awful. So I'm thinking about the scale of how awful this is because, so the reason this has become a talking point publicly is because T.I.
Chicken Katsu Curry.
Let's go with Katsu.
He just came out and boasted about the fact that he does this as if it was something to be proud of as a father, which he doesn't seem to understand the grossness of it. But that means there are people who do understand the grossness of it, keep it secret, and are putting a lot of women through this horrendous experience. So do you think there's like a cultural aspect to this as well as to why it's kind of suddenly hit the news and suddenly become such a talking point?
Yeah, I think the reason that this has been so high profile is not only because it's about a high profile person, but because it's someone who in many ways is firmly within the Western sphere. Right. You know, I think for so long, virginity tests are these things that are sort of pushed to one side, and it's something that happens to, you know, women in India or girls in the Middle East. And, you know, it's uneducated people. It's a developing world issue. And that's just like not the case. This has really brought it out that actually, like, you know, someone super rich in America can also do this. And you still get racist tropes. You still get people questioning his intelligence. But I think those cracks are starting to appear that this is like really widespread. And while I think there's still people pushing back against that, there's still people trying almost to act as though this is like a blip. I think that like virginity tests and extreme are actually just like, you know, the tip of the iceberg of lots and lots of other like really harmful stereotypes, really harmful tropes that are just everywhere. So we were talking about that thing of, you know, most of us probably went through sex ed just generally growing up in a society that said a woman's first time having sex is going to be painful, is going to be traumatic. And like, you know, and the idea that it's about education, like I've got a zoology degree. I was probably in my mid-20s before I finally realized that that wasn't true. I only really realized what the evolution, like what the actual purpose of the hymen was in the last few months.
I was actually going to jump in just on that. It's, I think what really fascinated me, especially sort of while you're talking about it, is, you know, it's not just places like you say in the Middle East or, you know, India, sub-Saharan Africa and stuff, but I think of the, you know, how closely that is linked to other things like, you know, FGM, like, so that's like female genital mutilation, like, and these aren't things that are just happening in, you know, I'm just saying, like, when people assume sub-Saharan Africa, they assume, you know, Africa, they assume India, Middle East, but diasporically, like, you know, you've got people here in the UK that do it, you know, so chances are there are people here in the UK in communities where it's sort of hushed-hush that it happens, you know.
But I think even saying like about FGM, that is still really harmful thing. It's a major issue, but it's still focusing in on this as an issue for diaspora communities, for essentially people who aren't white, when actually there are ways that this manifests. Like, you know, the idea that, you know, you want a woman with a tight vagina because that means she hasn't, you know, been sleeping around. You know, the idea that the more easier it is for a woman to orgasm, the more it means she's been sleeping around. You know, there are all these truly Western tropes that are also really harmful and that still imply control. They still imply, you know, possession by a man. Like, there's the idea that, you know, that a woman's vagina will start smelling differently if she's cheating on you.
Sorry, what?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so there are all these things.
Oz and I have both been like bouncing up on this. We've been like, sorry, what?
There's so much bullshit. And so I do feel like, you know, Western society, and I am going to say like white feminism, wants to focus on virginity tests, on FGM, because they want to push the issues away from them. And, you know, I do think that there's a lot of issues, there are a lot of underlying issues that are shared almost globally, because almost globally we live in a deeply patriarchal society. And until, you know, society as a whole starts examining all these different components, it's just going to be easy to just throw all this away as, oh, that's a problem with Islam, that's a problem with uneducated people, that's a problem with whatever else you feel like demonizing that day of the week.
It's an intersectional issue. And the moment you start, I understand your argument completely. When the moment you start saying, you start othering the problem, actually you're creating more issues because you're letting this kind of sentiment fester in your own community as well.
Okay, so I'm going to ask a rather naive question, Hannah. Why is this, white feminism, why do they not? First of all, I'm just like, why white feminism is my actual question. But why do you think they don't see this as an issue for feminism?
Okay, what is white feminism?
Yeah, so I think that's sort of a really interesting thing to start on before we get too much hate. White feminism is not about the skin color of the person who says they're a feminist. Mm-hmm. It is about a certain type of feminism that holds up the experiences of white women and focuses on the experiences of white women aside from, you know, the experiences of the majority of women on earth. And, you know, I think a really clear example of this that is constantly in the news is the way that Muslim women often have their feminist issues dismissed, because it's just like, well, that's because you're part of, you know, a restrictive culture and religion. You know, if you just like left your restrictive culture, then you'd be fine.
So it's basically another way of othering a community.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right, Hannah. Teach these white women.
It's not about the color of their skin.
Teach these white women.
And And I think the reason I do really sort of focus in on that, it's not about the color of their skin, is because I think white feminism is a type of feminism that plenty of women of color can have. You know, I think it's something that I was probably very guilty of when I was younger. You know, I think it's something that still creeps into some of my views today and something I try to challenge. But it is the brand of feminism that is the most out there. It's the brand of feminism that most people will encounter first, including women of color.
So it's not inclusive of lived experiences of all women.
No.
It just takes, like, I'm going to say, to my mind, a Western view.
Yeah.
It's like vanilla feminism.
Yeah. Like, you know, it's the view that says the moment you wear a hijab, you're not a feminist.
Okay, so you basically don't, you can't enter this conversation anymore because of what you're wearing. Yeah. Wow.
You know, it's the same view of feminism that thinks the burqa should be banned, because it is saying this is what we define a liberated woman to be, and this is what we define a unliberated, controlled woman to be.
Okay.
Okay, so what are the implications in the context of our discussion today? What are the implications of this brand of feminism on the Hyman story?
How's white feminism fuck this up? How's white...
I mean, I started this episode by saying it's going to be refined, but...
How has white feminism made T.I., Thai curry, katsu curry... Okay, how has it made things worse?
So... There's been a sort of related story to this that at first I felt sort of very conflicted about. And it's that there are a few different sort of artificial hymen type products. So I think like sort of fake capsules of blood have been around for a while. But there was a product recently that claimed to actually pretty much like mimic the membrane, and then sort of, you know, there would be fake blood involved. After a massive load of backlash, this product was actually taken off Amazon. You know, it's sort of been pushed into the fringes. I think it's still available, but it's this idea that, you know, this global giant that lots of people buy from decided to ban the product. Now, as will come of no surprise to anyone who's just heard everything else I've said, I would love for that product to be unnecessary. I would love for, you know, not a single woman in the world to feel that she needed to fake her virginity, you know, during sex. But the idea that the solution is to ban this when there are women whose lives might rely on it, whose women's livelihoods, you know, like this idea that people could, you know, be shunned from marriages, from families, you know, the idea that one of the most like common alternatives to these quite, you know, simple, relatively cheap products is surgery. You know, hymenoplasties are becoming increasingly common, especially in India. The difference is that like the sort of artificial hymen product was about 3,000 rupees, so about 30 quid, whereas surgery runs from anything from 20,000 rupees to 70,000 rupees. So we're looking more at like 200 to 700, obviously in an economy where that is a lot more money.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I took a look, like on Harley Street, you can get hymenoplasty, so like hymen reconstructive surgery, and they're like, yeah, it runs anything from 1,000 to 4,000, 4,500.
Wow. So clearly there is, even Harley Street in London in the UK, there is a need. There is a demand for it. Yeah. That's insane to me.
That is pretty insane. Yeah, that is pretty insane. But then it goes back to what you're saying. It's not a problem of just them. It's a societal problem, isn't it? And
yeah.
It's just the fascination with virginity and purity around women, which in itself is a way of controlling women, isn't it?
But again, it's this thing that in some way people want to take this away as a choice for the women who may really need it.
Wow, my mind has been blown by our discussion today. Guys, surely you've learned something new today.
I've learned a lot, man. I learned there's a lot of education that needs to go, especially with men in the world. Like, there's a lot of really fucked up men in the world, from what it sounds like.
Thai superfan, Alex.
No, I think what's really interesting is the discourse and like talking about how, I guess what I learned from you is that those products are actually really important. The ones that mimic the hymen stuff, like you were saying, it's not great that they're necessary, but they are necessary. Mm-hmm. And how like people's discourse on Twitter and brigading and stuff, being like, well, no, we got to do it this way, is actually making people's lives worse for retweets and shit. Yeah, so I've learned something new.
Yeah, thanks for enlightening us, Hannah. I'm not going to ask if you've learned anything because you've literally told us everything.
I'm going to come back with a bang, mate. You know what I mean?
I mean, the one thing I am going to say is just, particularly because I've been like angry and heated at times, I know I've been sort of slipping between sort of inclusive and occasionally quite binary language. So sorry to anyone who is affected by that.
Well, sadly, the time has come for us to say goodbye. So we're going to have a refined goodbye as well. Guys, say goodbye in a refined way, please.
Yeah. All right. See you next time, you know.
Piss off, you bloody bastards.
Farewell.
This has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Goodbye.
A zoology degree. I was probably in my mid-20s before I finally realised that that wasn't true. You know, I only really realised what the evolution, like, what the actual purpose of the hymen was in the last few months.
Sorry. What? I thought you were indirectly telling us you
It's true.
Public broadcast.
You're getting laid.
Oh, fuck's sake, Alex. Oh my god.
Typical blokes, isn't it?
Just give him a moment.
I'll give him a moment.
It's such a good joke.
Bring it back.
That was a cackle word.
Yeah, gosh.
Let me know when you're ready, dear.
Okay.
Now that Alex has gained his composure.
Yeah, Alex has returned to the room.
And breathe.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.